I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play and win from the comfort of your own home with hundreds of slot games and all of the table games you love with real cash prizes. Right now, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 for new users. It's all at SpinQuest.com. That's SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey friends, it's me again. You know what's really easy to do and even easier to forget? Help me out and hit that like button if you're listening on YouTube. If you're listening somewhere else, what the hell? Pop in and give me a thumb. Say hi while you're at it. Helps me a ton with that damn algorithm. And besides, it's always nice to see you there. All right then, let's hop on that crazy train.
All aboard!
Well, welcome, friend, welcome. Right around the corner from Thanksgiving, can you believe it? Hey, anyone out there know how to spatchcock an alligator? I know, boy, I know. It's just that I'm sick of all that dry-ass turkey. How am I supposed to be thankful for that? Well, I guess you're right. You'll probably be pretty dry, too. Ah, forget it. I'll let you live. Well, come on in, friends. Well, before we get started, let's run your pockets a little. First of all, consider becoming a patron. Just visit simplyscarypodcast.com, and for as little as $7.99 a month, you can help us keep this little operation running. And, of course, you get our entire catalog ad-free and available to download or stream. Still too rich for your own good? Drop a five at patreon.com/drewblood. Lavish me with your credits on audible.com. Jeff, too, he doesn't mind. Open a vein while you're at it. It's the season of giving, right? Okay, enough of that. Tonight we welcome author Robert J. Bradshaw. This story comes from his book Songs of the Abyss, from our friends at Valox Books. In this one, we join a customs officer at his lonely post in British Columbia, who's about to have an unusual evening. See how I don't ruin it? So without further delay, from author Robert J. Bradshaw, I give you The Coltrane Occurrence. May, 1994. The port of Coltrane, British Columbia, was not a glamorous posting, nor was it a particularly interesting place to work. Despite those relatively minor critiques, there was one thing that the cozy little port could boast about. It was quiet. Customs officer Jordan LaRoche flicked his cigarette butt out the window of his roadside interview booth and watched as it rolled into one of the nearby puddles on the pothole-laden road. He looked down the highway. The trees on either side were still dripping from the storm that had stopped a short while ago. The moon, while unseen from where he sat, cast a moody glow on pavement which continued far into the distance before veering off out of sight and eventually crossing into the United States several kilometers away. The port of Coltrane was what the agency called a one-man port. That is to say, when you worked alone. The union had been fighting these sorts of postings for years, and had even won on a few cases where a clear risk had been demonstrated. However, Jordan figured it would be a cold day in hell before any sort of action came to Coltrane. 10 cars a day in the summer, and maybe a third of that in the winter. Coltrane was far down on anyone's list for a place that needed a change. Jordan looked to the desk in front of him and gazed at the ratty copy of Misery he had been reading over the past few nights. He reached out to retrieve the novel, but thought better of it, deciding instead that it would be the perfect time to make some coffee. He stood up, clapped his hands together, and stuck his head out the window of the booth, holding it there as he listened for the sounds of any approaching cars. Satisfied by the still night, He pulled open the door to the booth and walked into the small lobby of the adjacent building, his eyes gravitating to the old faded map depicting gold rush routes which coincided when the port had been opened for operation. Jordan ventured to the side of the lobby and proceeded to enter the punch code to unlock the door. He entered the staff area and moved to the coffee maker before replacing the filter and adding a generous scoop of ground beans. He waited a moment, struggling to keep his eyes open, before he looked at the overhead clock and saw that it was just after midnight.
6 more hours to go, he mumbled to himself.
He had been at work for 6 hours now and had only seen one car. He thought back on the couple's confused faces as they admitted they were attempting to get to Banff National Park, but didn't realize it would have been quicker to go through the port of Coots out in Alberta. Jordan gave them some directions and wished them well. The pair had returned the favor in kind by wishing him a quiet night. Jordan had to fight the inclination to flinch at the remark. The Q word, as many officers had called it, was a curse like no other. Uttering such a slur on shift guaranteed that the succeeding hours of duty would be filled with nonsense, and even worse, dreaded paperwork. While Jordan considered himself safe in his current posting, he thought back to when he had worked at Roosevelt in his development years as a junior officer and recalled how the weirdest stuff always occurred after the dreaded Q word. The coffee maker began to sputter and gurgle, meaning it was about to begin dispensing liquid magic into the pot when the sound of the gas bell chimed through the office. Jordan looked up at the wall-mounted bell and felt a weight slump down across his shoulders.
A car at this hour?
He thought, reflecting on the line of cable that ran across the road a few kilometers south of the port. Jordan looked longingly at the empty pot before moving out from the staff area and into the lobby. The last thing he wanted to do was talk to someone at this point in his shift. He ventured to his booth and sat in his chair, his eyes studying the road for any indicator of headlights coming around the bend. He waited and waited, but no sounds of rumbling engines or stones being kicked up by tires could be heard. Most importantly, no lights. Losing patience and feeling the wave of tiredness come over him again, he stood up and opened the door to the booth before venturing out into the middle of the roadway. The smell of the passing storm filled his nostrils as he continued to listen to the wind that moved up from the south. Still, nothing came around the bend. Jordan thrust his hands into his pockets and figured his coffee would be ready by this point.
Must have been a deer or something, he grumbled to himself.
Jordan entered the office and opened the door to the staff area. Seeing the coffee had finished brewing, he grabbed a mug from the rack and proceeded to fill it before adding a few packets of sugar. He looked around the cramped office, listening to the hum of the overhead lights as his eyes studied the shabby bookshelf to the right, the same shelf he had liberated Misery from 2 nights prior. A pile of dusty magazines was piled up on top of the wooden monstrosity, with a collection of worn paperbacks lining each shelf. He lost his train of thought and headed back towards the entrance, coffee in hand. As he entered his booth, he lifted his gaze and with a lazy glance looked down the road. It wasn't long before his eyes widened and he flinched, sending some of the coffee to the floor. A man stood in the middle of the road some 50 meters away. Jordan put down his coffee mug and felt his heart begin to beat faster. He had never seen a pedestrian use this border crossing, nor had he heard of one doing so either from his colleagues. It would take hours to walk up the highway from the American port. Gathering his nerves, he opened the door of the booth and stepped into the road.
He could see the figure was wearing a large backpack and thought perhaps he was a camper. "There are no trails or campsites anywhere near here," he thought, eyes still locked on the man.
"Are you lost, sir?"
Jordan called out. There was no response. Instead, the figure began to walk forward. Jordan felt a chill move up his spine, and for the first time in his career, he was envious of his American counterparts and how they were armed with billy clubs, handcuffs, and firearms. As the figure approached, Jordan pulled out his flashlight and shined it at the man. The figure was clean-shaven, and his eyes were a bit red, but he didn't have the distinct look of a listless drifter. His clothes were in relatively fine shape, with the exception of the mud on the cuff of his jeans and a small tear on his dark green jacket. Most importantly, the man appeared to be carrying no weapons.
"Sir?" Jordan called out again. "Are you lost?"
The man was only a few meters away now, and Jordan began to grip his flashlight tighter, keeping his free hand raised in case he needed to strike if the man proved dangerous. The figure stopped walking and sized Jordan up. He seemed to focus on the uniform before saying,
"I didn't expect to see anyone."
"Were you camping?"
Jordan asked, his gaze darting to the large orange backpack the man wore.
"The journey makes you weary," the man said.
"I bet. Listen, did you cross the border today?"
"Border?"
The man spoke like he had never heard the word before.
"Yes. Are you coming from the United States, or did you stay within Canada?"
The man mouthed the words "United States" like it was some alien language before mumbling,
"Where am I?"
"Canada,"
Jordan said, not thinking much of the answer. If the man was a lost camper, it was possible he had no intention of crossing the border, and at night the trees all looked the same.
"Canada. Haven't been there in a long time."
"Right, well, you're here now,"
Jordan said, still trying to deduce if the man was lost, crazy, drunk, or a combination of all three.
"Do you have any ID with you?"
The man cocked his head at the utterance of the question.
"No, can't say I do. Haven't needed it."
"Oh?"
Jordan stiffened his back at the surprising answer.
"No driver's license? Maybe a social security card? Something with your name on it?"
"I don't know what those things are,"
the man mumbled. Jordan wasn't sure if the man said what those things are or where those things are. Either way, the man stepped forward to continue his journey, clearly becoming tired of the conversation. Jordan held out a hand.
"Have you been drinking tonight, sir? A couple by the fire, or?"
The man shook his head.
"No, the movement doesn't allow it."
He flicked a canteen that hung by his bag and said,
"Just water."
"Okay, well, you're at the border now, so I need you to identify yourself before I can let you continue."
Jordan looked at the man's hands once more to ensure they were empty before pulling his notebook from his breast pocket.
"Name and date of birth, please."
"Randall Kellerwood, August 6, 20.
Jordan ceased riding, looking up at the man.
"Sorry, do you mean the 26th of August? What year then?"
Randall Kellerwood blinked, appearing to become frightened before he began to walk forward again.
"The journey makes you weary,"
he repeated as he attempted to move past the officer. Jordan stepped in front of him and held out an arm before pocketing his notebook with his free hand.
"Listen, let's go inside. I want to make sure you're okay and..."
"I'm fine,"
the man said with a toothy grin, his eyes becoming wild.
"Sure, but I want to talk to you inside."
"Do you have any milk?"
Randall asked, running a hand through his greasy hair.
"That always helps."
"Milk?
Jordan mumbled as he gestured towards the entrance on the back side of the building.
Maybe,
he added after a moment as Randall followed his guiding arm and walked towards the door.
Drugs?
Jordan thought as he watched Randall stumble as he approached the well-lit entranceway. The man stopped walking and waved at the door. Jordan blinked in confusion before saying,
It's a pool.
Classic,
Randall said with a smirk before adding,
You're lucky being out here in nature.
He continued as he pulled open the door and held it open for Jordan.
All these trees does wonders for ya.
Rains a lot this time of year,
Jordan replied in as friendly a tone as he could muster.
Really?
Randall said, taking on a dumbfounded expression.
Drugs for sure,
Jordan thought as the two entered the lobby. Jordan gestured to the bench along the wall of the small space.
Here, have a seat and I'll do some checks.
Milk helps,
Randall repeated, prompting Jordan to let out a soft sigh as he wondered what he would do with this guy.
First order of business is calling someone.
He opened the door to the staff area before turning the corner and heading towards the back desk and grabbing the phone. He looked at the wall clock and thought it was best to call Roosevelt. As he finished dialing the number, Jordan pulled the phone over the short cubicle wall and looked around the corner into the office.
Hey, Randall, what's your citizenship?
UFA.
The man replied with such enthusiasm that Jordan thought for a moment that it was himself with the brain issues.
Right,
Jordan said before moving back around the corner and listening to the phone ring before a curt voice picked up.
Canada Customs.
Yes, hello. This is Jordan LaRoche over here at Coltrane.
Oh, hey, Jordan.
The voice on the other end responded with glee.
It's Ray. What's going on? Long time no see.
Ray, hey, listen. I got a guy here, a pedestrian, and I wanted to let someone know what's going on.
A pedestrian?
There was a pause before Ray added,
Is he dangerous?
Before Jordan could answer, there was the sound of Ray moving the phone to the other shoulder.
Hey, Kimmy, pass me that flyer. No, the other one. Yeah, the lookout.
Not understanding why that was relevant to his situation, Jordan said,
I really don't want to take my eyes off him, and the computer takes forever to warm up. Do you think you could run him, make sure he's not a...
Is his name Eric Solario?
Raymond asked. He sounded almost excited.
No, Randall Kellerwood. Why?
Oh, thought it might be the escapee from the prison in Montana. Went missing on his way to a dental visit, supposedly. Assaulted his guards and was last seen at a gas station near Great Falls or something like that.
Jordan's eyes widened.
No, doesn't sound like him, but this guy is odd. I think he's high or drunk or something.
Jordan walked around the corner and saw Randall was still sitting on the bench, staring at the palms of his hands before touching the metal of the bench and chuckling to himself.
Do you have a picture of this guy?
Sure,
Raymond said. The sound of paper could be heard.
Brown hair, short beard, looks like average weight. Oh, actually, it says here, weight is 198, height is 5'11".
That kind of looks like this guy, minus the beard, but... I don't know, that description is pretty generic.
Jordan, listen, why don't you get the handcuffs from the safe and keep them with you? I don't like the sound of this. I'll talk to Victor. He's the supervisor on. Remember him? Well, I'll ask if I can drive out to you.
It'll take you hours to get here.
It's fine. I'll ask him. You have some drugged out pedestrian. You aren't safe. Give me a minute.
Jordan sighed and placed the phone face up on the desk. He moved to the old corner office and opened the safe, pulling the handcuffs and tracking clipboard with it. As Jordan exited the office, he saw that the bench was empty. The man was gone. Jordan swore and moved out of the door, handcuffs in hand.
Randall!
He called out through the lobby. There was no response.
He went through the front doors and saw the bright orange backpack moving up the road.
Christ, he's fast, Jordan thought as he began to run after the man.
Randall, stop! Randall!
Jordan shouted as he neared the man. Randall kept walking, not slowing for a moment. As Jordan made his way up beside Randall, he said between shallow breaths,
I'm detaining you.
He reached out and placed his hands on Randall's wrist.
You are not free to leave.
I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play and win from the comfort of your own home with hundreds of slot games and all of the table games you love with real cash prizes. Right now, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 for new users. It's all at SpinQuest.com. That's SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
As the first handcuff touched Randall's wrist, he stopped walking and said,
I have an appointment.
He made no attempt to pull his arm away from Jordan nor fight, but said,
I can't be late.
Jordan struggled to pull Randall's other wrist towards him as the backpack made it awkward to do so. After a few seconds, he managed to slip the thin wrist into the handcuffs, saying,
I'm going to walk you back to the office. Then I'll read you your rights. You are detained for an immigration exam. Do you understand?
Randall remained silent, his eyes gazing at the stars above, appearing to admire how many he could see in such a secluded place. Jordan guided the man back to the port before leading him into the lobby and eventually into the staff area and a white room that served as a cell. Randall took a seat on the bench, staring at the wall as Jordan pulled a card from his pocket and read the man his rights.
Do you want a lawyer?
Jordan asked as he concluded reading.
They can't do nothing anyway, Randall replied.
Is that a no then?
Jordan asked, but Randall refused to elaborate further. Jordan wrote in his notebook the current time and Randall's answer. He tapped his pen against his chest as he thought of what to do next. He needed to frisk the man, but he also wanted to take the backpack off. However, to do that, the handcuffs would need to be removed. All the while, he knew Ray was still on the other end of the phone line, waiting to hear back from him. Jordan found himself with a lot of things to do and unsure of what order to do them.
I'll frisk him, then tell Ray. Then remove the handcuffs and get that bag off him.
Jordan set his plan in motion and frisked Randall. The man was compliant, stood when he was instructed, and was steeler than a stone as his pockets were padded and his belt line checked. The only thing of note that Jordan discovered was a single crumpled $1 bill in Randall's front pocket.
Vintage,
Randall said. But Jordan didn't hear him as he tossed the crumpled money over his shoulder to keep his hands free. Satisfied there was nothing else of concern, Jordan said,
Take a seat. I'll be back in a minute and we'll talk about those cuffs.
They are cozy,
Randall said, prompting Jordan to do a double take. The detainee had said it not as a complaint, but like a child talking about their favorite blanket. Jordan shut the steel door and hurried over to the phone.
Ray, hey.
Hey yourself, I wondered where you went. Is everything...
I had to detain him. He tried to leave. Got a minute down the road. He's in the cell now.
Did he fight? Man, I gotta tell Victor. I'm gonna get in the car now and get out to you.
Wait, run him in the database, see if we have anything on him. Or a missing person report or something. He's getting weirder.
Okay, I'll call back in 5. And don't open that cell.
Jordan muttered a noncommittal answer before hanging up the phone and heading to the cell. As he opened the heavy steel door, he could see Randall had remained sitting where he had left him, his eyes fixated on the bright light on the ceiling.
They say too many hurts the old noodle. Some stays there, some stays anywhere.
Okay, Randall, I need to search your backpack. Now to do that comfortably for the both of us, I have to take the backpack off of you. To do that, I need to take your handcuffs off.
You've been compliant, and I appreciate that. But I want you to understand that if you act up in any way, they will go back on.
Have you seen my backpack?
Rendell asked as Jordan stood in the entrance of the cell. Jordan ignored the question and stepped forward. Speaking slowly and clearly, he said,
You're going to stay compliant, right?
Compliance is the key to freedom,
Rendell said, as if he was quoting something. But Jordan didn't recognize it. Jordan told Rendell to stand and face the wall. Once Rendell obeyed the command, he removed the handcuffs and pocketed them before saying,
Take off the backpack, please.
Rendell complied and lowered it to the floor. As he did so, he said,
Don't take too long. They know I'm here. They will come looking. Don't take too long. They know I'm here. They will come looking.
Jordan knew these were nothing more than the ramblings of a disturbed individual, but he couldn't help feel a shiver run down his spine and asked,
Who's coming?
The men with the stretched faces.
Rendell appeared to look past Jordan, and his gaze widened in terror. Jordan grabbed the backpack and told the detainee to take a seat before shutting the cell and locking it. He let out a slow breath as another chill came over him. He moved down the short hallway and placed the backpack on the table beside the phone. He unbuckled several clips before pulling open the flap. He half expected the bag to smell of soiled clothes and cigarettes, but to his surprise, the only scent emanating from the items inside was a hint of lavender. He looked into the bag and removed a sweater and a pair of socks before seeing several items of equipment made of metal and plastic. Jordan pulled out the first object. It was a box that looked like a small Betamax player, or more precisely, like an oversized Walkman. It was gray. Two ports on the front where some sort of seven-pronged device would clip into it. Jordan turned it over to see if there was a manufacturing label, but he frowned when he saw none. Only the words, Made in the Republic of China, could be seen. The box felt heavy in his hand, but he could see no way to open it, no screws nor clips, not even a space for batteries. Jordan shrugged and placed it to the right of the table so he could inspect it in more detail later. Next, he pulled out a cylindrical object that looked like it was made out of a piece of pipe. The orange canister had a plastic casing that ran down one side with a small plastic window to see in. Two sets of wires, one red and one green, slithered over top connecting to parts unseen. At the top of the cylinder was a small keyboard containing the numbers 0 through 9. Jordan froze, thinking of the only logical use of such a device that looked like this. He put the object down with care and pushed back from the table.
A homeless guy couldn't get his hands on explosives? Could he?
Jordan asked himself, his eyes fixated on the cylindrical object.
Who said anything about him being homeless?
His brain continued to churn. His eyes drifted to the hallway where the cell sat a few meters away. Jordan gulped and let his curiosity get the better of him. He reached into the bag again. His hand brushed against some cabling before his finger reached around a small cube-shaped object. He tightened his grip and began to retract his arm. Slowly, and with delicate finesse. Calm and careful were the name of the game, not doing anything to disturb. Jordan jumped, his arm ripping free, the cube tumbling to the bottom of the bag. He clutched his head, letting out a nervous laugh. Jordan looked at the ringing phone beside him and took a moment to collect himself. After a breath, he lifted the receiver to his ear, saying,
Yes, hello. Customs and Revenue.
Good news,
Raymond said on the other end of the line.
Vincent approved it. I'm going to drive out there. Even better news is the name your guy gave you is clean. No record or alias. I mean, he could be lying, but... Well, anyway, I'm bringing the flyer with that escaped convict on it. When I get there, we can ID him and see if it's a match.
He paused before asking,
Everything going okay over there?
Jordan looked at the cylindrical object that lay on the desk, wrestling with himself whether he should mention,
Yep, everything is fine,
he heard himself say, not fully understanding why he had answered the way he had.
Great, I'll see you in 2 hours. Call Vincent if anything comes up.
Jordan said his goodbyes before hanging up the phone. He licked his lips and thought of going to ask Randall about the strange items in his possession, but at the same time he wasn't sure how the man would react, knowing that law enforcement had found them.
He may become aggressive, Jordan thought, listening to the tick-tick-tick of the electric clock above him. No, I'll wait for Raymond before I bring it up. In the meantime, I'll finish searching the bag and then ask him again if he wants a lawyer, just to cover my ass.
The gas bell on the wall sounded off. Jordan jumped in his chair.
God damn,
he said aloud.
Another car at this hour?
He moved over to the cell and ensured it was locked before pulling open the window cover and asked,
You okay in there?
Randall's gaze was locked on the far wall, his eyes intense as he mumbled,
I told him. I did. You gotta believe me.
Jordan shook his head, closed the cell window cover before moving out of the staff area and into the lobby. He trudged out of his booth and waited for the headlights. Just like before, he waited and waited and waited, but nothing came. After a while, Jordan's mind began to wander, eventually recalling what Randall had said.
Don't take too long, they know I'm here. The men with stretched faces.
Jordan's pulse rose, his eyes searching the dark roadway ahead.
Don't be stupid, he muttered to himself. He's crazy, that's all.
Despite his calming words, they didn't do much to remove the edge Jordan was feeling as he continued to wait, doing so for nearly 10 minutes. During that time, Jordan had worked himself up into a nervous fit. He had been busy conjuring up mental images of what these men with stretched faces looked like. After landing on a particularly heinous visage, he shook his head and stepped out from his booth and into the night. The sound of the wind could be heard as it snaked in and out of the tree branches. A twig snapped in the distance, followed closely by an owl hooting somewhere off to the east. All were the usual sounds one becomes accustomed to out in the middle of nowhere. But to Jordan's annoyance, there was no sound of an approaching engine.
And no long-faced guys either,
Jordan said to himself and the dark road beyond.
Still, why did the gas bell go off?
He tapped his pocket and felt a sense of security, knowing the handcuffs were still there. He waited a few more seconds before rounding the booth and entering the main building. He walked through the lobby and into the staff area. He took 2 paces, but stopped on the third, as he wondered why he felt something was different. The backpack. He froze, his eyes scanning the table, the counter, the window into the corner office. No sign of the bag, nor the devices he had retrieved from it.
No, 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 no,
he said, running down the hall towards the cell. He pulled open the window cover and looked inside. The cell was empty.
Shit!
He looked down at the lock and saw that it was unlocked. He pulled open the door and entered the small room. It was completely empty. No sign that anyone had been there, apart from an odor of burning metal.
How did he get out?
Jordan thought as he looked to the ground for evidence of an escape tool. A paperclip, a key, something to show how the man had Houdini'd his way out of the cell.
I frisked him good. He had nothing.
Jordan felt the sweat begin to sting his eyes. He pivoted and ran down the hall.
He couldn't have gotten far.
Jordan pulled open the door to the staff area and bounded through the lobby.
I would have seen him if he came this way,
he thought as he pushed the door open. He moved out into the night, stopping several steps from the dim light of the entrance. His eyes navigated past his parked truck and over to the spot where the guardrail gave way to the endless rows of trees. Not a soul in sight. He thought of running off into the woods to hunt for Randall, but quickly dismissed the idea.
I don't even know which direction he went.
Images of Randall jumping from the shadows and gutting him with a shiv lingered at the forefront of Jordan's mind. He scanned the road and the trees once more before jogging a quick lap around the building. He found nothing. Jordan clicked his teeth together with nervous energy before entering the office again. He moved over to the desk where the backpack had been and looked to the phone. He felt ashamed he had let Randall escape under his watch, but still his brain struggled to comprehend how the man had done it.
I checked the lock before I went out to the road.
His eyes moved up to the gas bell, studying it.
I only went out there because you dinged.
He gulped. While Jordan couldn't explain it, he felt the bell was somehow responsible. Jordan gave his head another shake. He was losing focus. He shifted his gaze to the phone and his mind wandered as he began to imagine the conversation he would need to have with Vincent. However, he already knew that his former supervisor was the least of his worries. No, the higher managers of the region would want to speak with him, and then he would be in real trouble. A formal investigation into his conduct would be launched. No doubt he would be written up for a dereliction of duty, and that was the best-case scenario. As Jordan continued to look at the phone, his mind spit out the idea that he should call a member of the union first so they would be aware that he would be in a desperate need of their services in the likely event that a disciplinary review was called. As he reached out to grab the phone, he paused, his hand hovering over the receiver, as he thought he should once again search the cell for evidence of how Randall had escaped. He turned and began to move down the hall, but didn't get far, as something on the floor caught his eye. Sticking up out of the olive green carpet was the crumpled up $1 bill he had taken off Randall during the frisk. Jordan moved towards the money and picked it up with delicate fingers. Unwrapping the bill, he saw George Washington on one side and the pyramid seal on the other. But these familiar sights were not what caused Jordan to stand unmoving in the hallway for so long. To Jordan's eye, despite its wear, the bill was too perfect to be a counterfeit. His attention stayed locked on the area just below Washington's portrait. The series the bill was printed under was listed as 2012.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That 2-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players' $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
And that was The Cold Train Occurrence by Robert J. Bradshaw. So much for a quiet evening. A little about the author. Robert J. Bradshaw was born and raised in St. Catharines, Ontario, Canada. He relocated to British Columbia seeking adventure. He currently lives in the Fraser Valley region. Nebulous Seas is Bradshaw's fifth release to date. His other works include the anthology Songs of the Abyss, released in 2020, Shadows at Midnight, released in 2021, and A Stone's Throw Away from Paradise, released in 2023. His debut novel, A Monarch Among Kings, a science fiction colonization epic, was released in 2022.
You can find Songs of the Abyss, which this story was from, and Shadows at Midnight at VeloxBooks.com and on Audible. Thank you, Robert.
And do old Drew Blood a favor, would you? Subscribe to his podcast wherever you do your listening and leave him a 5-star review and a kind word, even if you're listening on YouTube. He needs soldiers on all fronts to win this battle, and he appreciates it. To hear a premium ad-free edition of tonight's and all the other episodes, visit SimplyScaryPodcast.com today and click Patrons in the upper menu. You'll find yourself at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com, where you can become a patron for as little as $5 per month and get access to their entire audio archive, all ad-free and available to download or stream. Thank you for your time and for supporting our sponsors. When you support our sponsors, you support this show. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all the latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with them each and every week. Oh, and you can find Drew Blood on Facebook and Instagram, and sometimes Twitter. The Drew Blood's Dark Tales podcast is accepting submissions, friend. If you've got a story or two you'd like to be featured on the show, send it to drewbloodhorror@gmail.com. If selected, you'll get the full treatment, 10 bananas.
Well, I guess this is where we part ways, at least till next week. So grab a drink for the road, friend. We'll miss each other on Thanksgiving, as always, but that's all right. Eric Peabody makes a mean green bean casserole. Anyway, may the wind be at your back and may the road rise up to meet you. And until next time, go fuck yourself, bye, y'all.
I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play and win from the comfort of your own home with hundreds of slot games and all of the table games you love with real cash prizes. Right now, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 for new users. It's all at SpinQuest.com. That's SPINQUEST.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.